I have an eerie moment of deja vu thinking back to Halloween, the night I set my apartment on fire. This is different, of course. I was a bit out of my mind then and had just discovered that Maddie was Maddie and that she pretty much hated my guts and it seemed like my life was ending, and so I kind of went insane. Setting my place on fire was a reaction to everything that was happening that night. This, on the other hand, is a decisive action that I'm taking to rescue Maddie now that we've declared our love for each other and we plan to be together, because that's what lovers do. Shit. That's just what decent friends do. They show up for the other no matter what, and they're there when they're needed. When the time comes, they're the one person you can count on, the one who has your back. I've had that illuminated for me over these last couple of months with startling high-def clarity. And that's what this is that I'm doing now. It's decent. It's romantic. It's needed. And it's totally, totally sane. Right? Anyway. I go to the back of the car again and lift the mat that covers the spare tire and roadside emergency kit. I grab up the kit, open it, and pull out the two road flares that are inside. I take a breath looking at my car. There's a moment of wistful nostalgia. A few weeks ago, I didn't even want a car, but now I'm kind of attached to it. Not because of the car itself, but because it's one of the first things Maddie and I talked about. Back when she was Scarlet and I was just jabbering to her. Because it's what I was driving the night I found her running from Logan and Ricky in the alley behind Pete's. Because, shit. Because of the thing Raven said to me when she was giving me advice about how to handle my situation with Maddie. Your car, she said. It's a Defender, right? But hell, now Pete's is gone, and so is Pete for that matter. And Maddie's Maddie, not Scarlet. And I'm me, not fucking Ford Aston. I still chuckle every time I think about the fact that that's the name I came up with. Ford Aston. Huh? As if. And the simple truth is that nobody gets what they want in life without paying a price. Everything comes at a cost. It's been that way since the beginning of time. Adam and Eve wanted to eat the apple, but the price they had to pay is that paradise was taken from them. And if that myth is true, and hell, it's Christmas Eve, so if we're going to buy into a friggin' virgin birth, then Adam and Eve is no more implausible. Then we've all been paying for their fuck-up ever since. And that is an expensive goddamn toll to ante up for. So I guess if, in order to get Maddie back in my arms, I gotta torch a Land Rover Defender that I paid $500,000 for, well, while it stings a little, it really ain't nothing compared to all that other shit. I pop the top off one road flare, ignite it, toss it into the car, and then do the same with the other. If you set it right, a car can go up in flames pretty goddamn fast. They don't really explode, though. When I see that in a movie, I usually roll my eyes. Because it just ain't likely to happen. Unless, of course, there's a flammable metal or some other explosive component involved, like magnesium. If a car has magnesium components, boom. Huh. I don't know if mine does when I stop to think of it. This could turn into a much bigger deal than I'm anticipating. But only one way to find out. What's guaranteed is that the dampeners that hold the hood and tailgates and stuff will absolutely explode and blow shit off the car. The wheels will explode too, and that's what I'm expecting to happen first. After I toss the flares, I throw on my pack and hoof it out of the way as fast as I can, trying to position myself where I can see the guards. I'm maybe 1,000 feet away at this point, just under a quarter of a mile or so. And when they hear the gunshot-like sound of the tires exploding, they should come running. Again, this plan is unpredictable, dangerous, possibly excessive, and may not result in anyone being pulled away from a guard gate to investigate shit. I have no idea. But I'm fucking in it now, so I wait. The interior goes up in flames really fast, as expected. Leather burns quickly. It's just skin, after all. And skin burns pretty fast when it's all lit up. I know. There's a nice, toasty, marshmallow, roast-sized inferno baking away when I see that the flames have spread up inside the interior panel because I can clock smoke and a hint of fire peeking out from under the hood now. And in under a minute, pow, The hood supports blow, and the hood slams up, cracking the windshield. And that actually seems to have been loud enough to draw some attention. Two guys who I guess are community guards, even though they're not dressed in uniforms or anything, step out to the road and crane their necks to see what's going on. This is encouraging. And then the tires explode. Holy shit! I was not expecting it to be that loud. Nor was I expecting the Defender crashing down to make the squealing noise it does, but it sure as shit gets the job done. The two guys come running in the direction of the fire, which is now burning enough to be seen from where they are. One of them grabs up a walkie-talkie and shouts something in Spanish, and suddenly two more guys are running out in the direction of the fire, too. Looking through the binoculars, I can see no one manning the gate anymore, so I decide, this is my shot. I gotta get in there and see if I can find the truck and hopefully find Maddie. But when I go to take my first step, I find it hard to will my legs to move. Fuck. Please, not again. Not now. Don't do this to me. I have no idea how long these dudes will be away before they run back to get a fire extinguisher or call for reinforcements or whatever. I have to go now. So I close my eyes and I think of Maddie's face. Underneath me. Smiling. Telling me she loves me. And in a second, that image gives way to an almost too soon forgotten lifetime of memories. Scotty, Maddie, me, all jumbling together and cascading over one another. And I take that first step. It feels like I'm running through molasses or quicksand, but I'm moving. And as the memories tumble past, faster and faster, my gait gets faster too, and before I know it, I'm in a full sprint and tearing past the unmanned gate at the entrance to see. Are you kidding me? Wow. It's not a private community. I mean, it is, but... Jesus. Fucking Carlos Castillo.
Chapter 20. Maddie. What a way to spend Christmas Eve. I mean, really, you'd think God would cut me a break or something. The drive is pure torture. I'm talking I'd rather strip for the devil in eternal damnation than spend one more goddamned minute listening to Carlos whisper his grand plans for our future together in my ear. I want to throw up. And we're on the run from whatever he thinks we're on the run from. But all he keeps talking about is us. What the hell have I gotten myself into? I'm freezing, hungry, and there's a cramp in my leg that's been burning for hours, and no matter how I try to change positions, I can't make it go away. Plus, every time I move to try and get more comfortable, Carlos's hands are there, pulling my body back next to his. I can't deny needing his body heat. It's been hot as hell out, and I'm sure it still is, but I can't feel it. I feel the cold. Maybe it's fear, and I don't know it. Or maybe it's that I'm wearing an outfit that's nothing but strings and strips of fabric. I've had enough. Several hours ago. Finally, well after dark, the engine finally cuts off and there's the sound of many sets of feet as they rush over to the truck. The tarp is pulled back to reveal a perfectly dark, starlit night above my head. I squint up at it as Logan helps Carlos out of the bed. Then Ricky has my arm, pulling on me to follow. Where are we? I ask Ricky. But he says nothing, just hands me off to Carlos, who takes my arm and begins walking towards a... house? Mansion? Hotel? I plant my feet, making Carlos stop and say, Where the fuck are we? Only this time, it's loud and ragey. Because I've had enough. I need some fucking reality right now.
You don't need to know where we are, Logan starts, but Carlos cuts him off with one raised hand.
We're home. I don't normally spend a lot of time here. I prefer the open desert. I had a deal with the Federales. I stay out of Ensenada. That lets me live in peace.
He stares down at me, his dark eyes suddenly blazing with anger.
But they broke our deal today.
And that's when something explodes outside the compound. Men start shouting in Spanish. Everyone, and I do mean everyone, in my sight, has a gun out. Half a dozen armed men are rushing towards the front gates.
Carlos points to Logan and says,
Levala al mis apartamentos. Now.
Logan grabs my arm, not roughly, but not gently either, and starts pulling me away. Wait, I say, resisting. Where will you be? I'm happy to be out of that truck, and I'm delighted that Carlos is no longer touching me. But Logan? I do not want to be alone with Logan. I'm the reason his face looks like pulp today.
I have work to do,
Carlos snaps back, like I'm sort of stupid if I can't figure out that an explosion outside his safe house trumps my needs.
We'll have dinner soon. Take a bath and dress so you're ready when I call for you.
Dinner? A bath? What the fuck? And then Logan stops pretending to be gentle and yanks on my arm. I look back over my shoulder to see if Carlos caught that, but he's already walking away, talking in hushed whispers to other men as a stream of black smoke fills the air above the concrete block walls around this new compound. The only good news is that Ricky follows Logan. That is my first lucky break today. He stays well behind us, but at least he's nearby. I need to get him alone. I need to know what the hell is happening. I need to know if that really was Tyler flying my drone, and I need to make sure he's okay. I mean, I know it was Tyler. I've seen his drone moves. And then the memory of our date night out at the Hoover Dam comes to mind, and I smile.
What the fuck are you smiling at?
Logan barks, pulling hard on my arm again. Your uncle, I say, letting him pull me along the outside of the house, mansion, hotel. It's huge, just like the compound. But this new place is very different than the last one. It looks and feels more like a small town than a residence. Why is this place so big? I ask, trying to take it all in. It's pretty dark, but there's lots of street lamps as Logan drags me down a sidewalk towards a group of buildings away from the main one where we parked.
Because, Logan says, my uncle needs to keep our smugglers happy and close to work. And this place is how he does that.
Oh, I say. Good to know, Logan. Thank you very much for the first real piece of intel all day. But Logan stops abruptly and tightens his grip on my arm, squeezes it hard enough for me to feel a bruise forming in real time. What are you doing?
You speak Spanish,
he growls. And that's when I realize Logan just made that impromptu confession in Spanish, not English. And I just gave myself away. Not that I was hiding the fact that I understood them or anything, but I certainly never let on that I understood to anyone but Ricky. And he's on my side, so... Everyone speaks Spanish, I snap, trying to pull out of his grip. But he holds tight, his fingernails digging into my flesh.
Does my uncle know this?
Know what?
That you're spying on him?
I'm not fucking spying on him, you idiot. Like I said, everyone knows Spanish. But Logan grins. It looks painful, too. His left eye is swollen completely shut now, so it's more like a sinister wink than a smile. But it gets the job done, because my stomach flips with fear.
Oye, vamos, Ricky says, coming up behind us. Es noche buena, y quiero llamar a mi novia antes de ir a la cama.
I stare at Logan, not even daring to look at Ricky, even though I want nothing more than to see his familiar face and know that he's got my back. Because I think I might have really fucked things up here.
What did he say?
Logan asks, nodding his head to Ricky. I shrug. I don't know, something about calling his friend before bed. Logan glares at me.
Mentira pequeña pera.
I force myself to laugh. Now that I understood, and I'm going to tell your uncle you just called me a lying little bitch.
Go ahead,
Logan says, pulling me along the sidewalk again. We walk past what looks to be a private gas station where dozens of trucks are lined up for fuel. I bet this really is the staging point for Carlos Castillo's drug-running route. I mean, it sure looks the part, and it's all hidden behind massive concrete block walls. In fact, now that I look around a little, I notice a lot more, too. Dozens of people, all rushing around looking very fucking busy. And it's Christmas Eve. Maybe this is like the biggest night of the drug running here? Like, all the U.S. border agents are busy being festive and shit, so no one's minding the store?
Tell him, puta. Logan growls. He's gonna be very interested in your new skill set as a translator.
You better up your game,
Angel says, popping up on my shoulder. Because shit is getting real. This is the major league, Scarlet, not schoolyard kickball. It suddenly pisses me off that she's referring to me as Scarlet. Because Scarlet has retired, and fuck Angel for bringing her back from the dead. I'm goddamned Maddie Clayton, now and forever. But I don't have time to respond to her, not when I need to respond to Logan. Because she's right. He's out to get me. If I fail and get myself killed for being a DEA informant, it'll be because Logan turns Carlos against me. So I swing for the fucking bleachers and say, and I'll tell him you slipped up and sold him out, told me all about his business, and we all know what he does to people who disobey him, right? I can only imagine what he does to traitors. So you better be very careful about spreading rumors. Your uncle loves me. He wants to marry me, wants me to have his babies, and I love him back just as much. I can't wait to give him sons. Sons who will one day take over his business. I have to choke that last part out, but I do it. Because a guy like Logan wouldn't put up with the abuse Carlos hands out if he didn't think he was going to get something big in the end. Puta, he spits. Hijo de mi putas, I spit back.
Okay, okay, Ricky says, coming between us. Vamos a dejarla, Logan. Tenemos trabajo para hacer esta noche.
Yeah, vamos, Logan. You've got work to do. Don't want to piss your uncle off again. You don't have another eye to spare.
Cállate, perra,
Ricky shouts. It's so loud I startle backward.
Fuck you, I yell back. Fuck both of you.
Ricky takes my arm and drags me away, calling over his shoulder.
I'll handle this whore. Meet me at the house.
Except he says all that in Spanish. I don't look to see if Logan follows us or not, but he must take off and leave me to Ricky, because a few seconds later, Ricky leans into my ear and says,
What the fuck do you think you're doing?
In English. Fuck that asshole. I'm not gonna let him get me killed, okay?
You're doing a very good job of that yourself. Just shut your fucking mouth for once and let things go.
He whisper shouts that last part. He called me a slut, I seethe.
And you called him the son of a thousand whores. Nice way to escalate a battle you can't win.
What the fuck is going on? I ask. Where the fuck is Tyler?
I thought that was him I saw. Son of a bitch. I can only hope he's still back in Mexicali where he was not supposed to be in the first place. Fucking asshole. The two of you are an undercover agent's nightmare. You know that? This whole thing is FUBAR. I'm getting you out of here tonight, you understand?
And then he takes my hand and slips something into it. What's that? I ask.
It'll knock Carlos out cold. Slip it into his drink at dinner, and be ready for evacuation at 3 a.m. Got it?
Oh, okay. Fucking James Bond, I say.
Don't screw with me, Maddie. Just do it.
Fuck that, I say. And now I'm the one whisper yelling. I didn't just spend most of a day pressed up against his disgusting body listening to him daydream about all the babies I'm gonna give him for nothing. I'm not leaving until he's dead. Ricky's lips tighten, but he doesn't say anything else. Just keeps me moving along. We finally make our way to Carlos's apartments and stop in front of a large double door guarded by two gigantic men with assault rifles at the ready. Ricky says,
She's to stay inside and not leave. Understand?
In Spanish. They nod their affirmation, and Ricky opens the door, shoving me inside so hard, I fall to my knees on the floor.
Keep your fucking mouth shut, and do as you're told.
Again in Spanish. I'm about to tell him where he can stick his orders, but he slams the doors closed, and I hear the unmistakable sound of a key turning in a lock.
Asshole!
I shower and pick a dress out of the fully stocked closet. One with a pocket, where I stash the pill Ricky gave me. Whose clothes are these, anyway? I force myself not to think about it. Instead, I pace the room for what seems like hours. It's already 10 o'clock, and there's no way I'm leaving at 3 a.m. with Ricky if the job isn't done. It's goddamned Christmas Eve, and Santa's bringing Baby a present. Carlos Castillo in handcuffs, and Logan, whatever his last name is, dead.
Which means, Devil says, you just gotta get the job done before then, right?
Don't be stupid, Maddie,
I smirk at Angel's name and nomenclature. But yeah. Fucking right, I'm not Scarlet anymore.
Put the drug in his drink and get out of here. Your Christmas present is living to see another day.
I'm just about to answer her back when the locks on the door disengage and it swings open. Carlos walks in, slams the doors behind him, and lets out a long breath of air as he stares at me. Oh, shit. Logan told him, and he's pissed. But then he smiles.
Madison, he says, coming towards me, arms outstretched. You look lovely tonight.
I force a smile back and say, thank you. Relieved that my threats to Logan actually worked. But I've been waiting forever, Carlos, and I'm starving. Are we having dinner yet? I'm so hungry. That's not even a lie. I am starving, but I just want to be taken to the dining room so I can slip the drug in his drink and then go scout out the property. I need to find something to bring this whole operation down before whatever Ricky has planned comes into play.
I have more work to do. It's a big night. We have lots of business happening.
But it's Christmas Eve.
I whine. It's a stupid girly whine that makes me feel stupid, but I don't care. I need to get this shit on the road.
We're just starting our new life together.
Funny how it's getting easier to lie about this fake future we're not planning together, and we need to celebrate it properly.
Oh, we will, darling, he says, petting my hair.
And then he claps his hands, and the doors swing open again. This time a staff of servers come in carrying platters and plates with silver domes covering them. They head into the dining room, and one produces a tablecloth, snapping it into submission as it's laid out on the table. After that, it's a whirlwind of glassware and dishes and bottles of champagne. Fuck yeah. We're having drinks. Fizzy ones, which are perfect for dissolving pills. Now I just need a chance to plop it in. When all the table-setting fanfare is over, Carlos pulls out a chair for me. I smile politely and say, thank you, as I take my seat. He sits across from me, grinning like a boy, as he opens his napkin and places it in his lap. Servants remove the silver domes over the plates and platters, revealing a proper Mexican Christmas feast. Delicious, I say, biting my lip a little to entice him to soften up and forget about work. Champagne is poured, and then Carlos orders the servants to leave us alone.
A toast, he says, raising his glass, to our first night together.
I raise mine too, but tilt my head at him a little. Yes, well, technically it's our second night.
But it's our first night as a couple.
No, I say, correcting him again. We're still in the getting to know each other phase, right? I mean, we did agree.
I've been thinking about that, he says, putting his drink down. You want a courtship, yes?
Courtship. Jesus Christ, this guy. He's so delusional. Yes, I say, exactly, a courtship. Carlos smiles. It's kind of a sneaky smile, if I had to put a name to it. A sly smile, a cunning smile. Like he's got a trick or two up his sleeve that I never thought of yet. Like a cat on the prowl after a mouse, where he's the cat and I'm the mouse, and I just walked right into his trap.
Well, he says, getting up from the table to walk around behind me.
He takes my hair in his hands, plays with it, his fingertips brushing against the back of my neck, making the little hair stand up on end. And not in a good way. Something is wrong here. He leans down, his lips pressing against my ear in a soft kiss.
Well, that means we are dating, mi amor. And people who date do other things while they get to know each other. So you're going to stay with me now, every night in my bed, starting tonight. What do you think of that?
I'm holding my breath, my chest tight, my mind racing with what this means. Other things?
See?
He purrs into my ear, kissing my neck now, his hands on my shoulders. I didn't pick a revealing dress, but they were all strappy. He slides the straps down my arms now, his hand moving forward to caress my breasts. It takes every ounce of self-control not to elbow him in the mouth, every bit of willpower to let him touch me like this. I let that breath out, slowly, silently, and say, "Where are the tamales?"
"What?"
He laughs, but it stops him. Stops his kiss. Stops his hands. "Tamales," I say. "I love tamales, the sweet ones, but I don't see any on the table. Don't you have any tamales?" I turn in my chair to look up at him. "Please, can you ask someone to get me some?" He starts playing with my hair, a hungry look on his face, and not for the food on the table.
"Dessert comes later, and tamales weren't the sweet ending I had in mind."
I will stay calm. I will think critically. I will win this game by being smart and strong and... fuck it. "Please, please, please," I beg him, standing up in my chair and turning so we're face to face. I place both hands on his cheeks, gaze lovingly into his eyes, then take one more for the team, lean in, and kiss him on the lips. He grabs at me, pawing at the straps on my dress like he's going to take me right now. His kiss is forceful, hard, and overly demanding. I will not let my revulsion fuck this up. I won't. So I kiss him back, and just as he's about to lose control, I pull away and say, "Please, again, can you get me some tamales? I promise to thank you for it later." He hesitates, and I stop to consider that he may be crazy. He may think he's in love with me. Hell, he may actually be in love with me. But this tamale gambit is still pretty goddamned thin. But I'm in it now, and so I keep playing the game. "Or I can thank you now if you prefer." And I wink at him, because I just need him to turn his back so I can slip the drug into his champagne. Once he does that, I can deal with whatever comes next. I will have to. He'll pass out soon. I just need to get that damn drug in his glass, or there's no way he's not gonna fuck me tonight. His grin grows. Then he lets out a hearty laugh.
"Very well. Give me a moment."
"Take your time," I say. He turns away and walks over to the large double doors, opening them wide, looks over his shoulder once, again with a hungry look, and then starts speaking to the guards. I whirl into action. I have the pill over the top of his glass in one blink. It plops into the fizzing champagne and begins to bubble. Carlos is still talking when I look over my shoulder to check, but when I look back at the glass, the pill is still clearly visible. Jesus. Fuck. Leave it to Ricky to give me an insoluble drug. I stick my finger in the glass and give it a swirl real fast, still looking over my shoulder at Carlos's shoulders between the two half-open doors. I look back at the pill. Still there. I hear Carlos say, "Gracias." Oh my God, I'm so busted. My finger comes out, I sit back down, and reach down to pick up my napkin on the floor where it fell when I stood up. A hand on my shoulder makes me gasp.
"What are you doing?" Carlos asks.
"Waiting for you to deliver dessert," I say back, adding a coy smile to my play. "What else?" He stares at me. Then his gaze begins to wander around the table, looking for something out of place. Shit, shit, shit. I'm sure he's just about to spot the pill in his glass. Sure, I'm about to be raped, then killed. When shouting and a hard knock at the door pulls his attention in another direction. I exhale the breath I was holding. The doors burst open, and a man is standing there, talking so fast in Spanish I can't keep up with the conversation. Something about a truck and a blockade near the border. Carlos turns back to me and says,
"I have to go, but I'll see you later when I come to bed for the night."
He strokes my cheek, looks at me with real affection, and I let myself feel a little relief. I won't be raped and killed. Not yet, anyway. "It's fine," I say, my voice slightly shaky. "I'll be here." But then I get another idea. "But before you go..."
"Yes?"
Carlos asks, already walking towards the door to deal with whatever drug lord emergency he's having. "Do you mind? I mean, it's Christmas Eve and all, and I'm all alone. Do you mind if I take a walk out near the beach? I haven't seen it yet. I promise not to go in the water. I'll just walk on the sand." He's shaking his head no before I even finish.
"It's not safe medicine," Not tonight. I'm sorry.
But you have guards, right? Like, everywhere? Right? Surely it's safe. I know it is. You control the whole place. No one can get in here. I mean, you brought me here to keep me safe, and there's walls, and—
I said no, Madison.
He looks a little angry at having to tell me twice. I only have one trick left, so I do the only thing I can. I cry. Not sobs or anything, just a tear, just one. I let it leak out of my eye, let it fall down my face. He's transfixed at the whole display, and when I say, okay, in the smallest, weakest, meekest voice possible, he sighs.
Fine, but only the beach right in front of the house.
Thank you, I say, standing up. I finger the lapels of his suit, smile up at him, kiss him gently on the chin, and say, I feel so much safer knowing your guards are watching. I'll be right on the beach. He kisses me. Good God, how many times do I have to let him do that?
As many as it takes to keep breathing, Devil says.
Truth. Carlos leaves, pulling the doors closed behind him. And I bolt towards the sliding glass doors, opening them up just enough to slip through. I force myself to walk, looking over my shoulder at the guards. But they're congregating together, heads pressed in tight, talking. Then shouting begins on the other side of the wall around Carlos's private dwelling, and they scatter in several directions to see what new fresh hell the devil has conjured up. I take my chance and run. Because fuck this. Tyler was right. I'm gonna get myself killed, and the way it's going, that's gonna happen before morning. I figure he can't own the entire coastline, right? So I can just dart up the beach until I get far enough away to slip through some other rich drug lord's compound. Or whatever. There's not much cover, but there's little shrubby bushes and lots of hilly dunes. I climb one, slip down the other side, and look back to see if anyone's coming after me. Nope. I smile. Sure, I'm gonna get away. Sure, I'm gonna be on my way home soon, back to my fucked up life that's looking not so fucked up right now. And that's when a large man in black jumps out from behind a dune, cups his hand over my mouth to make sure I can't scream, and tackles me to the ground.
Chapter 21. Tyler and Maddie. The balls. That's where she needs me. Right in the balls. And I'm not gonna lie, it feels pretty good. Maddie, I stage whisper, which is a term I learned back in good old speech and debate. Maddie, stop thrashing, it's me. She stops flailing, but I can feel her still shaking underneath me, her coiled energy causing her to vibrate. She is what in Sanskrit is called Kundalini, and what is represented in imagery by a female serpent. Yeah, that sounds about right. What the fuck are you doing here? She shout whispers back. Helping, I say. Saving you from whatever the fuck. You didn't check in. You were supposed to check in. You didn't check in, so I'm here. This should not be surprising. I'm not surprised, she says. I wait for it, but get no more words. She just stares at me. Finally. What? I say. And then she grabs my face and kisses me on the mouth hard. And I know it's been less than 48 hours since she last pressed her lips to mine. But it may as well have been since time before time. Because I think I'm gonna start fucking crying. Grabbing her face in return, I kiss her hard back, and then my hands are fumbling down her sides, reaching for her ass. She grinds her hips into me as I claw at the bottom of her dress, dragging the material up her legs and digging my fingers into her skin. Stop, she says. Stop. No, why? I pant, still kissing. She gestures outward with a, we're in the middle of a beach out in the open with drug lords and armed guards and shit all around us, look on her face. And I can't deny it. She makes a good point. But still. So I shrug and keep kissing her, letting my hand find its way up the inside of her thigh, under the hem of her dress, pushing her panties aside and discovering that she's already wet. Doesn't seem like you think it's that bad of an idea, I murmur, still nibbling at her red, pouty lips. We could get killed, she grunts out in between gasps of breath as my fingers slide inside her. Yeah, well, this is how I'd want to die, I tell her.
Uh-huh,
she whines and nods her head. And then she's seizing my belt, unfastening it and working my pants down my hips. She uses her feet to push them all the way down to my ankles so that our lips don't have to separate as we continue recklessly, wantonly, foolishly consuming each other's life force. Because she's right. This moment, this here, this expression of passion and love for each other could get us killed. So we may as well make it fucking count.
This is a bad, bad idea. Bad? No, catastrophic. But I don't give a shit. I want him so much that I don't care if we get annihilated in a meteor shower of bullets. Or in an actual meteor shower, for that matter. Or if the sea decides to become angry and swallow us whole, dragging us both into the briny unknown. I just don't care. I want him. I want him to purge me of the feeling of Carlos. Of Carlos's body against mine. Of his lips on mine. Of his fingers touching my skin. I want to feel Tyler inside me instead, and in this most ridiculously unsafe of situations, feel safe. I take his cock in my hand even as he pulls my underwear down. He has to contort himself to draw my legs free of the fabric, but I won't let him go. His dick is throbbing so fast. It feels like I'm holding his heart. With my dress hiked up and my bare ass resting on the sandy beach, I can close my eyes and pretend that we are somewhere else, on some island vacation somewhere, maybe 20-30 years from now, still hot for each other, still ready to fuck anytime, anyplace. It's so weird. I'm not a schmaltzy chick. All that destined to be together crap that people believe in, I don't. Not usually. But after all this time, and all that I've been through, and all that he's been through, the fact that we are here now, together, well, I mean, there are 7 billion people on the planet, and yet here we are. So maybe this was all supposed to be. Maybe everything's gonna turn out okay. I wonder if he's thinking the same thing. I wonder if he's as scared as I am, but willing to put it aside for this chance to hold each other this way. I don't know for sure if he feels the way I do, but I do know that just in case everything doesn't all turn out okay, we may as well make it fucking count.
I press my lips to hers again as I thrust my hips forward and enter her. She throws her head back and moans, but just as she does, I hear some shouting in Spanish off to my left. I know she hears it too because she stops moaning and we both freeze for a second. We try to stop our breathing, but both of us gasp in and out in short, sharp bursts, but we manage to still ourselves, me resting inside her. After a moment, the voices disappear off into the other direction, and I lift my head to see if I can spot anything. I see nothing but beach and sea, and the lights of the, whatever the hell it is, city that Carlos has built for himself here. And then my eyes are back on her. This whole thing is so totally over the top that I can't help but find it funny. I tap her on the nose with my index finger and she looks at me oddly. What? She asks. I love your fucking nose, I say. Yeah? She responds, beginning to move her hips again. I swallow and manage to croak out. Yeah. Before I lose interest in speaking and grind along with her. She's holding my ass now, her fingers pressing into my skin. Pushing me into her deeper. Her eyes are closed tightly and the expression on her face is caught somewhere between joy, pain, and that look people have when they're dreaming, and to them, in that moment, the dream is real. My hands are on her hips and I hadn't noticed before, but they wrap almost all the way around her. I have large hands, I can palm a basketball, no problem. But even still, it strikes me just how fragile and malleable her flesh is under my touch. Pulling her back and forth under me, causes her to want to make noise, but she knows she can't, so she's stuffing it down. When she comes, all that pent-up energy has to go somewhere, though, so I'm bracing for the pornographic air raid siren that's likely to echo out of her when she lets go. To counter the fact that she's trying not to scream, she digs her fingers into me harder and harder. as if all that noise has found its way into her limbs and is trying to escape. I can feel her nails digging into my ass cheeks, and the sensation of it makes me harder, and as my cock stiffens even more, it fills her up entirely, pressing against her pussy walls, consuming all the space inside. She's biting her lip, trying not to make any noise. "God damn it," she whispers, turning her head to the side. Unfortunately, I'm not helping matters because everything she does is driving me crazy and it makes me fuck her that much more enthusiastically. The puffs of air leaving her nose let me know that she's close. There's the hint of a whimper along with her breathing, and I'm gasping now too. But just then, more voices, again in Spanish. Shit. I lift my head to see if I can spy anyone, but Maddie doesn't care if anyone's there. She just wants me. She wants my attention. I know, because what she does now gets it back on her in a hurry.
As my finger finds its way inside his asshole, I'm not sure how he'll react. I've actually never done it to a guy before, I don't think. But in my understanding, it can go either very, very well or very, very badly. And I didn't know I was going to do it. It just happened. I was already clinging to his ass for dear life, and then when he took his gaze up and away, I don't know. I panicked or something. I don't want it to be over just yet. I know that we need to hurry and get out of here, but I want us to be the ones to decide we're ready to go. Not be forced to stop what we're doing just because we might get killed. I mean, hell, people die every day, right? But what's happening between us now happens, well, never. As my middle finger slides in between his ass cheeks and finds the opening inside, his head snaps back to face me. His eyes are wide. Not in surprise, exactly. It's something else. I think it's delight. In fact, I know it is. Because he's got a little smile, and the smile turns me on so much that I push harder, just a bit, seeing how far he'll let me go. The smile spreads, and he nods a tiny nod that says, "It's okay." I can feel myself biting my bottom lip as I press my finger deeper, and a noise comes out of him, from the back of his throat like a stifled groan. Like he wants to moan and say dirty shit to me, but he knows he can't, so he stuffs it down, and it's just a squeak. And he's pounding into me now. I feel that he wants to be as far into me as I am into him. And he takes one hand off my hip and works it between our bellies so that he can land his thumb on my clit. I shake my head at him because I don't know if I can take it. But he smiles and nods his head at me as he begins rubbing me savagely. If we are to die tonight, let it happen now. I know that's a morbid thought, but it's the one that lands on me. I'm not a dumb person. I'm not a naive person. There are many, many people who have suffered immeasurably more than I have. I've seen it. And there are those who have suffered more than I can imagine, who I've never seen. But my pain is mine. It happened to me, and even though it may make no sense, I held on to it because to share it would make it less mine. But now I have. Shared it. I've shared everything. With the one person in the world who could have abated it sooner and didn't. The same person I blamed for compounding it. And the only person who could have ever really understood it. And it doesn't feel like it's less mine. It feels like it's just ours. And so, if we are to be taken away from each other in this world, I'd rather it happen while we are totally, completely joined than not. In French, orgasms are known as le petit mort, the little death. So hell, let's just go fucking all in. My lips press together and I nod at him, trying to let him know that I'm about to come. But his eyes are closed and his expression is contorted, which I think is him trying not to come yet. What a gentleman. So I do what I have to do to get his attention. I slap him across the face with my free hand. His eyes pop open like he forgot where he was, but he never lets up on the churning energy that propels him in and out. And when my eyes widen and I nod, he gives me a tiny, urgent nod in return. His thumb strums at my clit. My finger drives deeper into his ass. My hips make tiny circles under him as his back arches and crashes down with each penetrating thrust. And at the moment I come, he does too. Both of us struggling not to make a noise, as the tiny grim reaper waves his sickle, and we die in and around each other in exquisite anguish as our mute desire gives way to the sound of crashing waves.
When I was 10, they demolished the Aladdin Hotel and Casino on the Strip. Scotty, Evan, and I skipped school to watch it in person. It was an implosion. 4 floors of dynamite that went boom and brought the entire thing down on itself. Implosions are deceptive because they just look like a collapse, like it seems less messy and violent than an explosion. They may be less messy in that they consolidate the debris to a more manageable space, but they are no less violent. The power, the force that's required to bring a building down is just as severe as that required to blow it up. Entropy, chaos, all that science shit. But when all is said and done, the only thing that matters is that something extremely fucking major is happening to a physical object. Without the ability to scream or moan or shout, "Oh, fuck yeah," what Maddie and I experience is something akin to an implosion. All that force, all that shared energy, all that power between us, it just causes us to collapse into each other. Her body goes limp beneath me, drained of all its strength, and I fall limp on top of her, equally spent. It's not that we fucked so hard, we fucked harder. It's that we were both revving at an insanely high acceleration when we crashed into each other, and now we should be allowed to rest. But we can't. I pull out of her, and it's the loneliest my cock has felt in a long, long time. Probably ever. The look on her face when I exit makes me want to murder somebody. I mean, the truth is, it makes me want to cry, but I can't afford to do that right now, so I convert that sorrow into anger. Because as I pull my pants up and she cleans herself off, I am reminded of where we are. I almost forgot. Hidden behind this dune, bathed in the wash of a Christmas moon, it felt for a second like we were actually living the life I wished for us when she was packing in her bedroom. In some hidden locale, stashed away in paradise, living out our days off the grid and all alone. But yet again I hear shouting in Spanish from down the beach and remember, yeah, we ain't there just yet. I grab her panties when she's not looking and stick them in my pocket. I don't know why I do it. I just want to keep this moment with me for longer or something. It's weird, I suppose. Or else it makes all the sense in the world. I don't know. And then, leaning close to her, I whisper, "Hey, so what happened? Why didn't you check in?" "I couldn't," she says, straightening out her dress and sitting up next to me to also look and see if anyone might be coming. "Why? Did he, like, fucking tie you up or something?" I want the answer to be no, but a small part of me wants it to be yes so that before getting out of here I can feel justified in killing this motherfucker. "No, no. We had dinner, and then he watched me sleep." "He watched you sleep?" "I think so." "Jesus." Then I amend with, "I mean, he's not wrong to want to do that, but still. Fucking weirdo." "Yeah. Tyler?" she says with more concern than makes me comfortable. "Yeah?" I stroke her cheek. "What the fuck were you thinking?" "Huh. That is not what I expected to come out of her mouth next." "What do you mean?"
I mean, yeah, I know I didn't call, but shit, dude, I had it under control."
"Well, I didn't fucking know, and we had a deal."
"Fair enough, but the deal didn't include you starting a full-scale war with the guy."
The phrase "full-scale war" lands on me hard. "Shit, I am Rambo," I mutter.
"What?"
"Nothing. Look, I'm fucking sorry, but I don't care what kind of warranty you got when you bought that drone. Shit's defective.
Or you can't fly it."
I'm not arguing this point right now.
"Hey, all I could think was that something fucking awful had happened to you, and I had to come get you. If I had done it my way, I would have just crashed through the front door and started looking to make sure you were all right. I thought I owed it to you to be a little more tactical."
"So you're saying that this is my fault?"
"Yeah? Maybe? Little bit?"
She looks at me like she can't fucking believe my gall. and she shouldn't. But then she laughs. She laughs the laugh of a person you've known your whole life, but who still manages to surprise you. She laughs the laugh that you laugh when you're infuriated and scared, but when you step back to look at everything, it's just too ridiculous not to laugh. She laughs the laugh of a person who loves you. Me. Who loves me. She loves me. And that's all that matters in the world. Well, that and the distant shouting I continue to hear that reminds me we still have to get the fuck out of here alive somehow.
What's with all this?
She asks, referring to my dark clothes.
Tactical night operations. I slipped it on when this went from a daytime raid to an evening affair.
An evening affair, she repeats.
Yeah, sorry I didn't bring a tux. This'll have to do. But look, while I could chat fashion choices, you look great, by the way, all night, we gotta get the fuck out of here.
No shit, where's your car? You know those moments in life when someone asks you a question that you know the answer to, but your brain just malfunctions and it's like they're speaking, I don't know, Basque or some shit? I do. What's that? I ask like I didn't hear her.
Where's your car? Can we make it there from here without being seen?
Again, it's like she's talking Zulu.
My car, yeah. So...
This is not a moment when you want to be slowing down the forward momentum of a situation by explaining a lot of shit, so in this second I'm figuring out how to explain clearly but still efficiently. Her mouth is open in a way that suggests maybe if she prompts me to speak, she'll somehow plant the words in mine. Just like when I went to tail Logan into the strip club the day he got his ass kicked by Maddie and I found myself playing checkers instead of chess, not thinking two moves ahead. Boy, do I have egg on my face now. And then something either fortunate or unfortunate happens, depending on how you look at it. It's fortunate in as much as I am spared the embarrassment of explaining to Maddie what happened to Chocolate Thunder. That's what I named the defender. So dubbed after my favorite basketball player of all time, the great Daryl Dawkins, who played on the Philadelphia 76ers with Dr. J. Before my time, but in clips I've seen, dude was a savage on the rim. R.I.P. Double D.
Wow. So not the time to be thinking about this.
It is deeply unfortunate in that apparently even thinking about unlucky Logan has summoned him into being. Because from behind us, in the total opposite direction from which we've been looking, I hear what feels to my ear like the bolt of a Kalashnikov rifle being cocked, followed by,
Tyler, my amigo, so good to see you again.
I close my eyes, take a breath, open them, and see Maddie looking terrified before I turn to, sure enough, see good old Logan strolling up with his fucked up face and his AK-47. Shit. Unlucky Tyler doesn't have the same ring, but it's what I am at the moment. Or maybe just stupid fucking Tyler. But I gotta be me. So,
Logan! Oh, shit! Are you my secret Santa? Well, color me surprised.
Logan smiles a little and nods. It looks like it hurts him to smile with his busted chops and all, and that makes me happy. Ricky, who is on Logan's six and who looks incredibly unsubtle, does not smile. Eh, fuck him. I know it was a solid joke. In reference to Ricky, I say,
Hey, look, it's your girlfriend. I haven't seen the two of you together since I fucked him up in the alley that time.
Wow, Logan, I gotta say, he looks like he's healed up from that beating. You, buddy. Did Maddie have another go at you? I like that move for a couple reasons. One, it lets Ricky know that I'm not stupid enough to blow his cover. I can tell he appreciates it because his body language shifts ever so subtly. And two, it pisses Logan off. On the other hand, Maddie is looking at me like I'm out of my mind, which, I mean, shit, I am. She shouldn't be that shocked. She knows me pretty good. Anyway, Logan keeps smiling and nodding. I swear to fuck, it's like the guy went to cartoon villain school or some shit. So silly. But sadly, whether it's silly and cliche or not, when the butt of an AK smacks you in the chops, it stings a bit. Even me. My head snaps back and I black out for just the tiniest of seconds. I can feel my knees get weak and I almost think I might actually go down, but then my nervous system rallies, everything comes back into view, and I shake the lights back on. I smile and ask,
"That wasn't my present, was it? 'Cause honestly, it's kind of a shitty gift."
I can tell he's a little confused by the fact that I'm still standing, and he winds back like he's going to give it another try, but when I lean my face toward him and point at the spot on my cheek where I suggest he aim next, he grabs Maddie by the arm instead. Fuck. Shit. God damn it. Did my fucking wise-ass behavior just make life worse for Maddie, son of a bitch? He shouts something to Ricky in Spanish as he's dragging Maddie away, and Ricky comes up next to me and punches me as hard as he can, I'm guessing, in the ribs. And no kidding, it's the best punch I've ever been hit with. He nails it perfectly. Right in the soft spot just below the rib cage. Not quite a kidney punch, which I'm supposing he avoided on purpose, but in a pretty tender location and with enough force that I feel it. I'm impressed. I'll have to remember to compliment him later. As Maddie's being dragged off, she looks over her shoulder at me, her red hair being blown about in the night sky, the urgent confusion and pleading in her eyes. I tense to go charging for her immediately. Ricky grabs my arm and pulls me back. "You will fucking die," he whispers to me. "Yeah, and?" I ask him. "And so will Maddie." Fuck, he's right. I can help her, but you gotta let me. Don't fuck me here more than you already have. I glance at him. He means it. I can tell. I nod and shout toward Maddie. "I'll see you later, babe. We'll unwrap presents and roast chestnuts and shit." Ricky steps in front of me, gets right in my face. "What the fuck is wrong with you? The both of you?" I contemplate the answer to that. There's so much to unpack in the question, I don't even know where to start. So I just shrug and say, "You don't find us charming?" "That's weird. We're super fucking charming. Everybody says so." And when he grabs my arm and starts leading me toward whatever the fuck is waiting for me inside, I swear to God, he cracks the hint of a smile.
Chapter 22. Maddie. There's no talking as Logan pulls me along by the arm. No threats, no dramatic declarations, nothing. The bedlam that was going on before, with everyone running around all frantic, has calmed, and the lapping of waves on the shore is the only sound. It's possible that from somewhere I might hear the playing of Carol of the Bells, but it might also just be my imagination. I've always loved that song. I'm tempted to speak, but what the hell am I going to say? There's no explaining I can do. Nothing I can offer to get myself out of this. I can only assume he saw me and Tyler fucking. Or at least I hope he did. I hope he saw it, and it made him furious. I hope he saw my ass pressing into the sand and Tyler's big cock sliding in and out. And I hope it made him hard and lonely. Fuck him. Once we're inside, he drags me back to the room where I was before, the one that set up for dinner, the one with the champagne flute that has the pill in it. Had the pill in it. The flute is still there, the champagne is still filling it, but the pill has disappeared. Has it dissolved, finally? Did someone see the pill sitting in the bubbly liquid and pull it out? Where did it go? If it's the former, then maybe there's still a chance Carlos will drink it and knock himself out. If it's the latter, I'm screwed. More screwed, whatever, who gives a shit? Carlos is sitting at the table smoking a cigar. The hazy, gray-white smoke hovers in the space like a misty morning fog. The smell is rich and round and reminds me of peat a little bit. I take a breath and close my eyes for a moment.
"Medicine," Carlos says. "How was your stroll?"
He takes a long puff off his cigar, throws his head back, blows the smoke out. I don't say anything. Again, I see no point. Logan shoves me further into the room, toward Carlos.
"She was with him," he says.
Carlos nods, pursing his lips. He tilts his head back again like he's contemplating something. He takes another puff off his cigar and asks,
"Which him, exactly?"
"The Tyler him. He's here. He's the one."
"I see," says Carlos. And what were they doing, the two of them?
I look at Logan. He looks at me. To hell with it. We were fucking.